the do not disturb sign on the door, pull the drapes, and don't set foot outside. Not unless the building's on fire, and even then, only if the flames are actually heading your way. Are we clear? Sounds straightforward enough. But tell me something. How did you register for the room without my ID? No need to worry about ID. They're not hard to get. And anyway, here they're more interested in pocketing a few extra bucks than following a bunch of dumb rules. Outstanding, Reacher said. My kind of place. Reacher got to room 20 comfortably ahead of Vittich. He held the key card next to a black plastic rectangle below the handle. A red light turned green, and the door clicked open. Inside, there was a king-sized bed against the right-hand wall. The cover had a picture of a lunar lander printed on it, and the headboard was a giant semicircle, grayish-white, and textured to look like the surface of the moon. The carpet was orange. The walls were inky blue. There was a pair of chairs that were covered with teal fabric, a metal desk/vanity, a flat-screen TV, stars painted on the ceiling, and a pendant light shaped like a satellite. A door at the far side of the room led to a bathroom with a separate shower stall, but the fixtures in there were all plain white 21st century standard issue items. They were totally anonymous. Reacher wondered if that was a design choice, or the result of some miserly investor tightening the purse strings. Vittich followed Reacher inside and closed the door behind him. He took a moment to look around, then said, "Wow, what a place. I wasn't expecting this." He pointed at the ceiling. "I wonder if the paint glows in the dark. Then you'd have the whole Milky Way to keep you company." Reacher thought the painting looked nothing like the Milky Way. The constellations were completely wrong. He knew because he had gazed at them hundreds of times from dozens of countries in both hemispheres. But he had learned over the years to keep his more pedantic observations to himself. So, instead, he said, "This isn't the room she was in?" "Who?" "Gibson's handler." "Oh, no. She was in one, at the opposite end." "No space theme over there?" "Maybe. I couldn't see. The door was only open for a second." "But you got a good look at her." "When she came out, sure. Why?" There was a knock on the door, one sharp rap, a pause, then two softer taps. Vittich said, "Hide the guns. I don't want to put my guy in a jam." Reacher took the SIG and the Glock from his waistband and slid them under a pillow. Vittich turned and opened the door, and a man stepped inside. He looked to be 6 feet even, and he was wearing dark chinos, a cream shirt, blue suit coat, and boat shoes. His hair was sandy-colored and thinning, and his face was pink from the sun. He was carrying a backpack in his left hand. It was made of black ballistic nylon with all kinds of pockets and flaps and straps. It was scuffed and creased and a little dirty. It lived a busy life, that was clear. Reacher wondered if the bulk of the guy's medical practice lay more on the unofficial side of the scale than Vittich had suggested. "Buck, thanks for coming." Vittich gestured toward Reacher. "This is the friend I was telling you about. He got banged up in a car wreck. Guess he broke his wrist. Hit his head pretty good, too, so maybe you could take a look at it as well while you're here?"
"No problem."
Buck Holmes crossed to the bed and set his pack down on its back. He pulled the tag on a zipper that ran from the bottom left, around the top, and all the way down to the bottom right. Then he pulled the front of the pack, folding it over across its base so that it opened completely like a clamshell. The inside was full of small instruments in clear packets and all kinds of bandages and dressings in white sterile packages.
"Okay, let's get started. Shirt off, please. Pants too."
Vittich moved toward the door. "I'm going to step out now. I'll get you some food. What do you like?" Reacher said, "Sandwiches. 4. Meat or cheese. Nothing green. Chocolate bars. Nothing fancy. Pie, if you can find any to go.
plus coffee, black, and a couple of bottles of Coke. Vidic closed the door behind him and Reacher turned to Holmes. You want me to strip? Is that necessary? I hurt my wrist and I'm wearing a t-shirt. Buck crossed his arms. Ever served in uniform? Reacher nodded. Army, 13 years. So, you've done basic life support training as a minimum, yes? Reacher nodded again. Cast your mind back to the final assessment. You find your victim. He's lying on the ground, screaming, writhing around, clutching his knee. You dive right in and start bandaging that knee. What happens? You fail the course. Correct. Because your patient would die from the internal bleeding in his abdomen that you missed when you only focused on the injury he told you about. See where I'm going with this? Reacher slipped off his pants and laid them on the bed next to the doctor's pack. Then he took off his shirt and placed it on top of the pants. Holmes stepped in closer and ran his eyes over Reacher's torso, shoulder to shoulder, neck to navel. He was silent for a moment, then said, This isn't your first rodeo, is it? I see bullet wounds. I see knife wounds. And what's this? He pointed at a long curved scar just above the elastic of Reacher's shorts. Some other kind of blade? Reacher said, Shrapnel. Part of a man's jawbone. Happened in Beirut a long time ago. That's one I haven't heard before. Turn around. The doctor visually examined Reacher's back and legs, then had him lie on the bed. He poked and prodded areas of soft tissue, manipulated joints, tested reflexes, then finally said, Okay, everything seems fine, so get dressed and I'll check on your noggin. Reacher slid back into his t-shirt and pants, then sat on the side of the bed. Holmes said, You hit your head in the car wreck? Right. Did you lose consciousness? Yes. For how long? I don't know. Any memory loss? I can't remember the accident and maybe an hour before it happened. That's probably nothing to worry about. There's a good chance it will come back, given time. Now, who was the 44th president of the United States?
Barack Obama, served 2 terms, 2009 to 2017. Born in Honolulu, Hawaii, August 1961. Married to Michelle. As to, okay, your memory's fine. Have you thrown up since the accident?
No.
Any dizziness? Dropping things? Walking into furniture? Door frames?
No.
Ringing in your ears?
A little.
Eye pain? Double vision?
No pain. Eyesight was blurry for a while. It's okay now.
Sensitivity to light?
No more than usual.
Holmes pulled the slim flashlight from his pocket. He switched it on, held it out, and moved it slowly from side to side.
Follow the light with your eyes. Just your eyes. Keep your head still.
Does that hurt?
No.
Good. Your pupils are reacting normally. How's your depth perception?
Same as always.
Holmes put the flashlight away.
Obviously, it would be better if you could go to the hospital, get checked out properly, but I'm not too worried. I think you have a mild concussion. I want you to take it easy for 24 hours. You can take Tylenol if you need to, but not aspirin or Advil. No alcohol either. After that, you can get back to light exercise, whatever feels right. Just make sure not to hit your head on anything. That's very important.
Understood. Thanks, Doc.
No problem. Now let's take care of your wrist.
Holmes selected a sterile package from his backpack. It was cylindrical, about 12 inches long and 3 in diameter. The pain is sharp, not dull, and eases when your wrist is still and not being touched. Reacher nodded.
Okay. Well, In an ideal situation, the first step would be to establish the full extent and location of the injury. But that would call for an X-ray machine, and obviously we don't have one here. So I'm going to assume the radius or the ulna is fractured, or possibly one of the carpal bones. Holmes tore open the package and took out a roll of some kind of tight, black, mesh-like material. Hold your hand up, pointing at the ceiling, fingers together, thumb out. Reacher did as he was asked. Good. Holmes pulled out a bunch of rods from the middle of the roll and set them on the bed. The rods were round, made of plastic, and ranged in length from 12 inches to 4. He straightened out the material, which made it look more like a mat, a half inch thick, with long pockets let into one side. He held it up alongside Reacher's hand and forearm, stared at it for 10 seconds, then rolled it back up, gripped it with both hands, and bent it double like he was trying to snap it in half. We have to move fast now. There are 2 chemical compounds in this sleeve, and now that they're mixed, they're going to set rapidly and harder than regular plaster, so I need you to be ready. Don't move. Holmes grabbed some of the rods and started to feed them into the pockets in the sleeve. He started with an 8-inch rod in the first pocket. He slid 12-inch rods into the next 6 and finished with another 8-inch in the last one. This will hurt at first. I'm sorry. He held the sleeve up and wrapped it around Reacher's wrist, starting below his knuckles and extending to his forearm, his thumb protruding through the open side. Then Holmes pulled back 4 broad Velcro tabs, 1 above Reacher's thumb, 3 below, and wrapped them around to fasten the sleeve in place. Can I move now? Go ahead. Take it easy for 10 minutes, but once it's set, you can do everything you normally would. You can even take a shower. Just don't knock it against anything. Holmes had already left when Vidich got back with Reacher's food and drink. He set the paper sacks on the desk, then stepped up close to get a clear look at Reacher's wrist. Vidich gestured toward the cast. That thing working? You feeling better? Reacher nodded. Good as new. How about your head? Still attached. And your memory? Does Buck think it'll come back? Something about the tone of the question put Reacher on the defensive. He didn't know why, but something made him reluctant to turn his cards face up. So he said he wasn't hopeful. Oh, that sucks. Well, get some rest. I'll come back for you tomorrow, maybe the day after. If so, I'll bring you some more food, or send someone you can trust. But whichever day we leave, remember, no one can know you're here. Keep the drapes closed, and don't leave the room, not for a minute. Leave here? Reacher said. I wouldn't dream of it. Chapter 8. Reacher leaned down so that his eye lined up with the peephole in the motel room door. He looked out into the parking lot and immediately caught sight of Vidich's back moving quickly away. The fisheye lens made Vidich's body look swollen and round, like a balloon figure, and he seemed to be floating rather than walking. He was making for his Jeep, that was clear. Its white body and black hood made it easy to spot despite the distorted optics. Reacher saw the dome light suddenly glow. Vidich's angular head was silhouetted just for a moment, then the Jeep's cab went dark again. Vidich must have closed his door. Reacher couldn't tell if he had started the engine, but the Jeep's headlights didn't come on. The Jeep didn't move. It stayed where it was for a minute, 2 minutes. Reacher smiled. It was what he had expected. Vidich was watching in case he broke the terms of their deal and bolted. Then Reacher made a bet with himself. He had Vidich pegged as an impatient kind of guy. He wouldn't last more than 1/4 hour before he gave up and left. Reacher was the opposite. He would wait all night if he had to. A 15-minute delay barely registered as an inconvenience.
particularly when there were two other things he needed to do. Reacher took the styrofoam coffee cup from one of the paper sacks that Vidic had left and carried it to the bed. He sat down and took a sip. It wasn't the best he'd ever had. It was lukewarm, gritty, and it had a burnt, bitter aftertaste. But it contained caffeine, and that was what counted. It would be easier to persuade a heroin addict not to shoot up than to stop Reacher drinking coffee. His brother Joe had been the same way. On the rare occasions he gave it any thought, Reacher blamed his genetics. Mostly, he just looked forward to his next cup. When he was done with the coffee, Reacher picked up the phone from the table next to the bed, hit 9 for an outside line, and dialed the number from memory. The call was answered after 2 rings. A man's voice came on the line. It said, "This is Walwerk." Ronnie Walwerk was an FBI agent. His path had crossed Reacher's a couple of times over the last few years. Reacher felt their interactions had been pretty equitable. If anything, he would say Walwerk had got the fairer shake due to the regulations and bureaucracy he brought with him. Walwerk saw their encounters in a whole different light. Things had always panned out. He couldn't deny that. But he didn't look back on their exchanges with any degree of pleasure, or even satisfaction. To him, they were like bullets he had somehow managed to dodge. "Walwerk, this is Reacher." The line was silent for a moment. Then Walwerk said, "I told you to forget this number." "True, but you didn't hang up." "Because I have manners. But I can't help you, whatever it is. Find someone else. I don't need help." "Then why are you bothering me?" "I heard a rumor. It could be serious. Call the tip line. You might get a reward. It's most likely BS, but if it isn't..." Walwerk resisted for a long moment, then said, "Go on. What have you heard?" "One of your guys has been killed in a car wreck while working undercover."
"Damn. When?"
"Today, around 1 p.m.
"Where?"
"In the Ozarks. I don't know the name of the nearest town. I'll send you the coordinates."
"You saw the body?"
"No."
"Where is it now?"
"That's unclear."
"Who told you this?"
"A member of the group this alleged agent apparently infiltrated."
"Do you believe the guy?"
"You said his story was BS."
"Most of it is 24-karat BS, I'm sure. Like how he followed this agent to a meeting with his handler and eavesdropped on their conversation. Sounds about as likely as him spotting a fish wearing roller skates. But a couple of other things he said, I don't know. I can't rule them out."
"Such as?"
"The place this alleged meeting took place is plausible. I asked what the handler looked like, and he didn't miss a beat. The description he gave could hold up in court, right down to her wearing shoes she could run in, and not having any jewelry that could get snagged in a fight. Same goes for the car he said she drove away in."
"Why would he tell you those things, whether they're true or not?"
"He thinks I have a beef with his boss. He claims he's done with the outfit and wants to quit with more than his share of the ill-gotten gains. I think he's worried I'll burn it all down before he can do that. So he's trying to play it two ways. He wants me to help him. Failing that, he wants to scare me off."
"Do you have a beef with the boss?"
"Most definitely. So here's the problem. If this group is the target of a sting, I'm happy to back off. I don't want to blow a bunch of undercover work, especially if it cost one of your guys his life. But if the Bureau's not involved..."
"Stop right there. I know how you operate. Any plans, keep them to yourself. I don't want to hear them."
"Fine. But there's another problem. Say my guy's telling the truth. An agent had infiltrated this group, and now he's dead. What happens next? Some kind of lost contact procedure, presumably, which would take a set amount of time. Then a rescue team would have to be mobilized. When the net finally closes, at least one of the assholes would be in the wind. Maybe all of them would be, which we don't want. I'll start digging.
What's your guy's name?
Ivan Vidich. Could be an alias, I don't know.
Any tattoos, distinguishing features?
He has a weird square head, but no tattoos. Nothing else that stands out.
Okay. I'll run his background too.
Good, but there's one more thing. Vidich said he heard the handler use the agent's code name.
Really? Why would she do that?
Doesn't make sense.
I know.
But if it somehow is legit,
it could speed up the verification process.
What name did she use?
Albatross.
Got that.
Okay, got to go.
Where can I catch you if I need you? Have you got a cell phone yet?
No cell.
You can call this number.
Leave a message if I'm not here.
Chapter 9.
Vidich sat behind the wheel of his Jeep with one eye on the door to Reacher's motel room and the other on his phone. He dialed Fletcher's number, but before he hit call, his phone began to ring. It was Fletcher calling him. Vidich smiled. He loved coincidences like that. He took them to be signs that the universe was winking at him, letting him know he was on the right track. He hit the answer button. Fletcher said, "Where are you?" Vidich said, "At the diner by the highway."
"What are you doing there?"
"Getting something to eat. I missed dinner."
"Seriously? Gibson's dead, and all you can think about is your stomach?"
"If I starve myself, will that bring Gibson back to life?" Fletcher didn't reply. Vidich said, "I'm sorry, scratch that. I know you guys were close, but listen, I was about to call you. Losing Gibson, the stranger showing up the way he did, I've been doing some thinking. We need to talk about what we do next and when. We have some decisions to make, urgent decisions."
"Damn right we do. Meet me at the cave in an hour. We'll figure everything out then."
"The cave?
Why there?"
"You'll see."
"Okay, I guess.
One other thing. The stranger. Something weird happened.
He got away."
"How? You said you were going to tie him to a table."
"I did.
I cuffed him. Somehow he got the cuffs unlocked. Must have had a key hidden somewhere. But how is not important. Finding him is. So keep your eyes open. He and I, we have unfinished business."
"Understood.
Will do."
"Good.
Last thing. Is Paris with you?"
"No.
Why should she be?"
"No reason.
See you in an hour."
The call disconnected and Vidich sat for a moment, staring at Reacher's door. He wasn't happy about what he'd just heard. Why did Fletcher want him to come to the cave? It was the most secluded place he could think of. And why did Fletcher want to know if he was on his own? To figure out if he needed to worry about witnesses? Vidich turned and looked over his shoulder as if he could see through the Jeep's back seats and into the trunk. His go-bag was there, as always. He had everything he needed, including a copy of the report. He could leave that minute, never be seen again. But then he thought about that wink from the universe. He figured he was overreacting. Maybe Paris was thinking along the same lines. He called her number, but got bounced straight to voicemail. He hung up, thought for a moment, then called her again. This time he left a message. Then he turned his attention back to Reacher's door.
It was 5 minutes since he'd closed it behind him. He figured he'd give it another 10, and then, if Reacher was still inside, it would be safe to assume he would stay there. Reacher counted down 10 minutes in his head after Walwork ended their call, then crossed to the door and peered out through the peephole. Vidic's jeep had gone. The space it had been in was empty. Reacher scanned the lot just in case Vidic was playing it cute and had switched to a different spot, but there was no sign of the black hood anywhere. Reacher grabbed the key card and slid it into his back pocket. He stepped outside, made his way past the row of rooms, listening at each door until he got to the office. No one else was there, but he saw that the color scheme from his motel room was carried over: orange, lime green, teal. But the design didn't extend to the fixtures. There was a vending machine, essentially the same as hundreds of others he'd seen in hotels and motels all across the country. A wooden dispenser holding leaflets with details of local attractions, a plain reception counter, and on it, a computer. Reacher didn't care either way about the furnishings or the decoration, but he wasn't too happy to see the computer. He had been hoping for an old-fashioned ledger. He found those far easier to interrogate. He leaned across the counter and contemplated the keyboard and the mouse. He was wondering which one to start with when a door opened in the back wall. A woman came through. She was maybe 5 feet tall, maybe 25 years old. Her hair had been dyed scarlet some time ago. It had long blonde roots, and it was sticking out at crazy angles like she had recently been electrocuted. Her skin was pale and pockmarked. She was skinny to the point of malnutrition, and she was wearing bleached denim overalls and a plain white t-shirt. One strap was hanging down, unfastened, and a badge pinned to the other gave her name as Mary. "Can I help you?" she said. Reacher said, "I hope so." He attempted an engaging smile. Or, more accurately, "I hope you can help my sister. We're not hiring." "That's not a problem, because she's not looking for a job. She's looking for her husband." Mary shrugged. "I haven't seen him." "I wasn't suggesting you had, but she heard he's been coming here, maybe to see someone else. Every week, like clockwork. So I need you to tell me if anyone is renting a room on a regular basis." Mary shook her head. "No, I can't." "It's not possible?" "No." "Are you sure?" "I'm certain." Reacher nodded toward the monitor. "Aren't those kind of details stored in the computer?" "Obviously. But I can't share them with you." "Can't or won't?" "I'm not allowed to. There's like 8 company policies stopping me, and probably the law, too." "You don't need to worry about those things." "Why? Are you a cop?" "You don't look like one." "I used to be one. But that's not what's important here. What's important is that the information does exist, right there in the computer." "It does. But it's private. You're not getting it." "Life is a very uncertain thing, wouldn't you say, Mary?" "I guess." "Well, this is a very unusual moment, because right now the outcome is absolutely guaranteed. I'm leaving here with the information I want. There is no doubt about that. The only question is how we get to that point. There are 2 possibilities. 1, you tell me what I need to know. Or, 2, I call my old cop buddies. Suggest they come visit. Now, I'm going out on a limb and guessing that you don't want those guys coming here with their dogs sniffing around your locker. I'm guessing you don't want them stopping you on your way home and searching every last hiding place in your car. Am I right?" Mary's eyes grew wide. "Please, there's nothing I can do." You don't understand. I can't give you that information. I just cannot do it. You've got to believe me.
Let me tell you what we used to do back in the day when an investigator needed information from someone who wasn't supposed to give it to us. That person would leave the file or the records or the computer on their desk and step out to the bathroom or to have a cigarette or whatever else they felt like doing. While they were gone, we got what we wanted, and technically they didn't tell us a thing. Does that sound like something we could work with here? Mary didn't reply. Or would you prefer the dogs and the traffic stops? Mary thought for a moment, then said, 2 minutes. She worked the keyboard for a few seconds and fiddled with the mouse. Then a display popped up on the screen. A grid. The squares across the top indicated the days of the week. The squares down the side showed the room numbers. Reacher waited until Mary ducked out through the door behind the counter, then turned his attention back to the screen. Vidich said that Gibson met his handler in room 1 earlier that day. The grid showed that room 1 had been booked by a corporate client, a company named Automotive Factors, Inc., which had a contact number with a 312 area code. That would place it in Chicago, if it actually existed. Reacher picked up the desk phone and dialed the number. His call rang 6 times, then diverted to a message that gave the correct company name and stated its standard business hours. He wondered how hard it would be to fake such a thing. He figured it would be pretty straightforward. Reacher scanned down the screen and saw that 4 other rooms were occupied. His, under the name John Austin, presumably the name Vidich had used when he checked in, and 3 other rooms. They were all under the names of apparent individuals. No way to tell if they were legitimate, or what the clients were using the rooms for. He experimented with the mouse until he figured out how to make the display go back to the previous week. He saw the same company name, Automotive Factors, with the same 312 phone number, but this time registered against room 4. The other 3 individuals all had the same rooms. He went back another week. Automotive Factors was booked into room 6. The individuals had the same rooms. The week before, Automotive Factors had room 2. Mary reappeared after 3 minutes. She said, "Got what you need." Reacher clicked random parts of the screen with the mouse until the display changed to a high-level menu. He said, "I don't know. We'll see." Chapter 10. The diner was Reacher's next port of call. He stepped inside and found the interior didn't match the outside at all. Instead of cutesy and affected, it was plain and simple, just as he liked it. There were 16 four-top tables in 2 parallel lines, 1 large rectangular table at the far end for larger groups, and a hatch that led into the kitchen. The place was deserted, which wasn't surprising, given the time. It was a minute shy of 1 a.m. Reacher moved across to the window and picked the seat that gave the best view of the front of the motel. He could easily see the door to room 1. He could see the doors to all the rooms, except 20. The diner was an excellent observation point. Vidich's claim about seeing Gibson's handler could have been true. It could have been. That didn't mean it was. A door to the side of the serving hatch opened and a waitress appeared. She was tall and thin, with gray hair tied up in a bun on top of her head and a kind expression on her face. The name tag on her apron read, "Hannah May." She said, "Back so soon? You must have liked us. You can't stay away." Reacher said, "You've seen me before?" Hannah May tipped her head to one side.
That's not much of a pickup line, and this isn't a bar, so I don't really know what to do with that.
Reacher held his hands up, palms out, as if to apologize for the confusion.
I was in a car accident this afternoon. I can't remember anything that happened this morning. The guy who pulled me out of the wreck told me he saw me here earlier. I'm trying to figure out whether he was shooting straight or if he's trying some kind of angle.
You were here, no doubt about that. I never saw anyone drink so much coffee in so short a time.
When I was here, did you see another guy, kind of stooped with a strange square head?
Hannah May nodded.
A guy like that was sitting where you are now.
Ever seen him before?
No. A head like his, I'd remember.
Reacher wished he could ask her about Gibson, but he didn't know what the guy had looked like. He had no idea how to describe him. He swallowed his frustration and got to his feet. He said, "I'm going to switch seats. I don't like this one." He moved to a table near the wall where he could keep an eye on the kitchen door, the main entrance, and all the other tables. The waitress followed. The look on her face said, "Weird," but not the weirdest thing I've seen on this job. Out loud, she said, "Want any food while you're here?"
Reacher said, "What did I have before?"
"A cheeseburger and a piece of pie."
"Did I like it?"
"There was none left on your plate when you were done, so I guess you did."
"Okay, sounds good. Let me have that again."
Hannah May stepped away and was back a minute later with a mug of coffee.
"Don't worry, I'll keep them coming."
The food arrived after another 10 minutes. Reacher picked up his fork, then said, "Tell me about this place. I heard a bunch of crazy houses were built somewhere nearby in the 70s.
Hannah May shrugged.
"Guess so. Some fancy architect trying to lure people away from New York and places like that back when crime in the cities was out of control."
"Did it work?"
"I couldn't say. I don't know much about real estate. I know that there are people living in one of them."
"What kind of people?"
"I don't know. But when you drive past the place, sometimes there are SUVs parked outside, pickup trucks, box vans a couple of times."
"And the other houses, anyone living in those?"
"You thinking of buying?"
Reacher smiled. "Absolutely not. Just interested."
"Well, they were all vacant for a few years, but I heard a couple have been bought, maybe more. I don't pay too much attention."
"When did they get bought?"
Hannah May glanced up at the ceiling for a second.
"I'm going to say maybe January 21, around then, after the worst of the COVID madness anyway."
"Ever see the people who live in them?"
"I don't know if people even do live in them. The lights are always off, no vehicles to be seen. There's some kind of investment, I heard. Someone else said it's to do with money laundering, but I don't know about that."
"Is there anything else I can get you?"
"Not right now, but I'll be back for breakfast."
Vidic was waiting for 5 minutes before Paris's Land Rover pulled up alongside his Jeep. He had picked the meeting spot carefully. It was 10 minutes from the place they had been summoned to by Fletcher, the cave, so it was convenient. And it was hidden from the road by a screen of dense trees, so it was discreet. If Fletcher had a helicopter, Vidic would have worried, or a drone. But as things were, he was confident they wouldn't be seen. Paris climbed down from her Defender and got into the Jeep's passenger seat. She said, "What's going on? Why does Fletcher want to see us?"
Vidic said, "Guess we'll find out."
"Why so late? And why at the cave? This doesn't feel good."
"Two possibilities, as I see it. One, Fletcher has found out about us and Bowery, and he's going to shoot us in the head."
"Don't joke about that."
"Who's joking?" Or two, he's cooking up something else.
Like what?
No idea. That's why I wanted to talk before we see him. Paris was silent for a moment, then said, what if there's a third option? What if he's found out about the report and he wants a piece of it? What would we do?
Shoot him in the head.
Ivan, this is serious. We're looking at a fortune. We could easily give him a chunk and not even notice the difference.
No way, no how. I hate that asshole. He's not seeing a penny.
How do we say no? We don't know he's found out. Don't jump to conclusions.
But if he has, we should be prepared. We should have a plan.
I do have a plan. You know the stranger that was with Gibson?
What about him?
Fletcher let him escape.
Seriously? How?
The guy overpowered him would be my guess, but that's not the point. The point is that Fletcher doesn't know where he is. I do. And he's going to help us. I had something else in mind, but we could use him for this, too.
Why would he help us?
He doesn't know us. He thinks there's something in it for him.
Is there?
Of course not.
So what do we do?
We make sure the Russian job goes ahead, soon. It needs to be wrapped up tomorrow, the day after tomorrow at the latest. So if Fletcher balks, I need you to back me up. We still do the job. We just alter the timetable.
Okay?
And the stranger?
Another loose end. How does that help?
Don't worry about him. He won't be a problem at all. Not for us, anyway.
Chapter 11. Reacher stepped out of the diner and took a moment to scan the parking lot. He didn't expect that Vidic would have come back, but he was a cautious man. A teacher in shop class had drummed into him, "Measure twice, cut once," back when he was barely a teenager. He had never forgotten. He had foreseen little use for woodworking in his life, but he appreciated the sentiment all the same. So he adapted it, made it into something more relevant. Look twice, act once. That became a key principle. It had served him well over the years. It had helped him stay alive while the fools who rushed in had wound up 6 feet underground. There was no sign of the Jeep, but one shape did attract Reacher's attention. A man's silhouette. He was in front of the motel office, 10 yards from the door. He was maybe 6 feet 2 or 3. He was wearing jeans and a black leather vest, and the light from the office window was reflecting off his shaved head. It wasn't so much the size of the guy or his clothing that caught Reacher's attention. It was his movement. He seemed agitated. He was pacing from side to side. 15 feet one way, then 15 feet the other, back to where he started, over and over. He didn't pause. He didn't change his pace. It was like he was mad about something and was looking for someone to take his aggression out on. The direct route to Reacher's room led right past the guy. That was fine by Reacher. He wouldn't bother the guy. Not as long as the guy didn't bother him. It was his rule. The guy in the leather vest turned and started to walk away from Reacher. Reacher set off at the same time, in the same direction. The two men were 60 feet apart. They stayed that way until both had covered 15 feet. Right on cue, the guy turned and started walking back toward Reacher. Reacher continued directly toward the guy. The gap closed to 50 feet. 40, 30. Then the guy broke his routine. He didn't turn. He stopped and stood still with his head tipped to one side. Reacher kept moving but adjusted his course slightly so that he would pass the guy on his left-hand side. The guy stepped across to block Reacher's path. Reacher thought, mistake. He shifted back to his original course. The guy stepped over to block him again. Bigger mistake. The guy stood with his arms bowed and his fists clenched. He scowled for a moment, then said, "You the one who's been bothering my girl Mary?" Reacher said nothing. "Don't deny it. It was you. She described your ugly ass. You were asking questions, poking your nose where it doesn't belong." Reacher said nothing. "Questions about girls and missing husbands. That stops now. Get it?" Reacher said, "Rooms." "What?" "I asked about rooms, not girls." "Same thing." "You think that, you're doing something very wrong, my friend." "Whatever. The point is, the questions stop. You leave, and if you ever come around here again, you'll regret it." Regret it, as in, I would wish I'd chosen to spend my time somewhere else, where the company's more engaging. I'm warning you, smartass. "You're warning me?" "Damn straight." "You're not doing a very good job. Warnings have two parts. If you do X, the consequence will be Y." "I'm not hearing about any consequence other than some vague idea of regret." "Spell it out for me. Say I don't leave. What are you going to do about that?" "Stick around and you'll find out." Reacher spread his arms wide. "Here I am, sticking around. I'm warning enough. I've used up all the time I have for your nonsense. Go back to your boss or whoever sent you and tell them I have no interest in whatever you've got going on here. I'm not looking for trouble. Stay away from me and no one needs to get hurt. As soon as I see you leave, that's not going to happen. I'll leave when I'm ready. Leave now. Make me. Happy to. Go ahead. Try. But before you do, think about this. You can still walk away. You should. While you still can. What are you going to do? You've only got one working arm. If I only had one working finger, that would be enough. Be smart. Walk away." Reacher could see the guy weighing up his next move, a twitch of his right arm, a shuffle on his left foot. He was slow off the mark, that was for sure. Reacher guessed the guy usually got by through intimidation, but that had already failed. Reacher felt his neck muscles flexing. He was ready to drive his forehead into the guy's face. It would be a brutal move, vicious, devastating, one of his favorites. A kind of Pavlovian response to being confronted by an asshole. But Reacher stopped himself. He remembered the doctor's words, "Don't hit your head on anything. It's important." So he decided to play it safe. He watched the guy draw back his right fist. Then he stamped on the guy's front foot. He used all his weight. He felt the little delicate bones beneath the guy's instep crush and shatter. He stepped to the side. The guy screamed and doubled over. Reacher drove his left knee up into his face. For a moment, the guy looked like an acrobat on a balancing pole hanging in midair. Then he landed on his back. His legs slammed into the ground a moment later, and after that, he didn't move. Reacher looked around. He could see no one in the parking lot. He checked for cameras. Didn't spot any. He checked that the guy was still breathing, then walked over to the office door. He shoved it open and stepped inside. Mary, the woman with the red hair, was standing behind the counter. She looked like she'd seen a ghost. Reacher said, "Mary, come with me." Mary stood still. She didn't respond. "Come here." Reacher's voice had become a low rumble. Mary could feel it in her chest. She closed her eyes for a moment. Reacher could see her lips moving, but he couldn't hear any words. "Come here. Now." Mary crept around the end of the counter. Her arms were rigid by her sides, and her legs were straight and stiff. "Who did you call?" Mary's eyes widened. "How did you find out?"
"Who?"
"I don't have a name, just a number. For the man who rents the three rooms. For the girls who... You know what they do in there. Listen, I'm sorry. I had to call. I need money for..." "You can probably guess. And he said if I go against him, he'll put me in one of those rooms. And I figured, with your questions, you must be some kind of rival. A newcomer looking to muscle in."
"I'm not."
"I'm sorry. I didn't know."
"Here's what you're going to do to fix it. Look out of the window. When I'm gone, call that number again. Tell whoever answers what happened to the guy he's sent. Tell him that if he sends anyone else, the same thing will happen to them. Then, when I have a spare 5 minutes, I'll come for him. And he won't send anyone anywhere ever again."
If a chivalrous man suspected he was walking into a possible ambush, he would volunteer to go first, give his partner a chance to escape if things went south. Vidich was not a chivalrous man. He killed his jeep's headlights, coasted up to one of the heaps of spoil that hid the approach to the cave, checked that his dome light was switched off, opened his door, climbed out, crept forward until he could see the entrance, waited for Paris to pass him, and watched to see what kind of reception was in store for her. The place they called the cave wasn't really a cave. It was the entrance to a gold mine. Only it wasn't really a gold mine either. A local guy, fresh back from California in 1856, had taken a gamble. He used his last few ounces of black powder to blow a hole in a rock face, planted the few miserable gold nuggets he'd been able to find out west in the rubble, and sold the mineral rights to a wannabe millionaire from Chicago. A few months and a couple dozen yards of fruitless excavation later, the venture was abandoned. It was briefly reactivated in the 1940s in the pursuit of uranium, but that search proved futile, too. The entrance was shuttered, metal rusted, weeds grew. People forgot that the place existed until Fletcher arrived. He was looking for somewhere remote to store any wares that were too hot to sell right away. When he spotted the place on a satellite image online, he figured they could build something secure. But when he visited for the first time and pried open the rusty barricade, he realized the hard work had been done for him. All he needed was a new set of doors, something substantial, with keys that couldn't be duplicated, and a security camera linked into the existing system at the house, just to be safe. The doors to the cave were open when Paris arrived. The nose of a panel van was sticking out. Paris had never seen the vehicle before. She pulled up next to Fletcher's Cadillac Escalade and jumped down from her Land Rover. She looked around, saw no one, then heard footsteps crunching on the gravel. Fletcher appeared from the cave's entrance and strode toward her. Paris said, "Darren, what's going on? What happened to your hand?" Fletcher glanced at his splinted fingers but ignored her question. He said, "Good, you're here. King's inside. We just need Vidich to show up."
"Why?"
"All hands to the pumps. 911.
"What's happened?"
"We've been targeted by the FBI.
"Are you sure?"
"Sure enough to get the hell out of Dodge."
Chapter 12.
Reacher waited until he saw Mary's face disappear behind the blind in the office window. Then he leaned down, grabbed the unconscious guy by his belt, and dragged him through the gap between the office and the diner. He moved deep into the shadows, stopped, and looked around. A dumpster was sitting in the center of the space behind the office. It was small, not a suitable place to deposit a body. The area behind the diner was much more promising. There was a large dumpster for regular waste, another for recycling, a tall cylindrical container for collecting used cooking oil, and another shallower rectangular container. It was painted green, and it had a bunch of symbols stenciled on its side. Reacher didn't recognize them, so he lifted the lid and looked inside. The thing was full of food, lettuce, tomatoes, onions, various other vegetables that Reacher wasn't familiar with, hunks of bread, scraps of meat, all in different stages of decomposition, all giving off a disgusting stench. Reacher weighed his options. He came down in favor of the food container. It was long enough, deep enough, and it was the lowest, which made it the most convenient to throw the guy's body in using only his left hand. Reacher emerged from between the buildings and started to turn left toward his room. Then he stopped. He turned right instead. Went back to the diner and saw Hannah Mae sitting at the table he had used, drinking coffee. Hannah Mae started to get to her feet. She said, "Breakfast time already." Reacher gestured for her to stay in her seat. He said, "Not yet. I have a question. The green dumpster out back, what happens to all the waste food that's in it?" Hannah Mae shrugged. "Goes to a farm, I think. Gets fed to the pigs. They'll eat anything, those critters. How often does it get emptied?" "Every 2 or 3 days. Unless it gets full quicker than that. Then the boss calls someone, gets them to come an extra time." "When's the next collection?" "Tomorrow, I think." "Why? Want me to check?" "No need. I'm just curious." Vidic kept his eyes on Paris's hands. If she clasped them low down behind her back, that was the emergency signal. It would mean Fletcher was on to them, that the meeting was a trap. It would be Vidic's cue to charge in, guns blazing, and rescue Paris. He was ready to jump back into his jeep if she gave the sign. That was for sure. Only he wouldn't drive toward the danger. He would drive the opposite way. Vidic watched for 5 minutes. He saw Fletcher approach Paris, saw them talk, saw plenty of arm waving on both sides. Something major was being discussed, that was clear. But Paris's hands stayed far apart, and they stayed in front of her body. So when Vidic was sure he was safe, he drove around the heaps of ancient spoil and parked next to her defender. Fletcher waited for Vidic to jump down, then turned and started toward the cave entrance. "Come on," he said over his shoulder. "We have things to talk about." Reacher left the diner and strolled back to his room. He locked the door behind him, stripped off his shirt and pants, placed them under the mattress so that they would get pressed while he slept, then went to the bathroom. He brushed his teeth and thought about taking a shower. It was late, but his body was sore. His right shoulder hurt. So did his arm, his rib cage. All probably as a result of the accident earlier in the day. And his head was aching. He figured a little warmth and some steam might help. But before he could decide, the room phone started to ring. Normally, he ignored calls late at night. They were usually bad news. He knew. He had made plenty of them himself over the years, but this time it could be Walwark calling, or Vidic. He could be checking that Reacher was still there, or giving word that it was time for the next step in the plan. So to be on the safe side, Reacher picked up. "Mr. Austin." It was a woman's voice. Mary, from the motel office. Reacher said, yes.
Mr. Austin, I thought you should know. A couple of detectives were just here looking for you.
Really?
Yes,
a minute ago. Were they wearing suits or undercover clothes?
Undercover, I guess.
Which division were they from?
Mary paused.
I'm not sure. They just said they were detectives. They showed me their badges and everything.
What did they want?
They were asking all about you. Where you were. If you were in your room.
Like that?
What did you tell them?
I said I didn't know.
Why are you telling me this?
I thought you'd want to know.
I would, if the police were looking for me in the middle of the night.
Mary, is someone there with you?
No.
Did someone get you to make this call?
Mary was silent.
Mary? Remember the thing with leaving the files or the computer or whatever and me not saying anything, but you finding out anyway? Can we pretend we're doing that?
Understood. Good night, Mary.
Thanks.
Reacher set the handset back in its cradle and retrieved his clothes. He put them on, but he didn't go outside. There were no detectives looking for him. That he was sure about. He guessed that a couple of buddies of the guy he'd thrown in the pig slop had shown up, maybe in response to the call he had told Mary to make. She must have given up his room number. But if these guys were friends of the motel and needed it to run their business, they wouldn't want to risk causing damage. They would want to lure Reacher outside before starting whatever trouble they had in mind. And if they wanted trouble, Reacher had no problem with giving them some. But it was going to happen on his terms, on his timetable, and it could wait till morning. That would be best from a tactical standpoint. It would leave plenty of time for their adrenaline to drain away. They would be much less brave in a few hours' time. Reacher was confident about that. But he slept with his clothes on, just in case, and he kept his left hand under his pillow with his fingers against the Glock's grip. The entrance to the cave was 20 feet wide by 10 feet tall. The opening was square and true, and Fletcher had installed a metal frame to carry the weight of the doors. The first 15 feet of the excavation was also relatively neat and smooth, but beyond that the floor became ragged and the walls and ceiling began to slope and weave at crazy angles until they met to form a rough shelf another 20 feet back. Fletcher had rigged up a lighting system that ran off a series of car batteries. He'd set up shelves along the left-hand side, constructed a mesh cage in the center for securing the most portable valuables, as well as adding an old safe against the right wall. He'd also dragged in 3 old couches. They were arranged in a U-shape between the cage and the safe, and when Fletcher led Paris and Vidic inside, they saw that Kane was already there, sprawling on the central one. He had a can of beer in his hand, and when he caught Paris scowling at him, he let out a huge belch. Paris took a seat as far from Kane as she could get. Vidic sat next to her. Fletcher remained standing. He moved to the center of the U and said, "All right, listen up. There's no easy way to put this. We always knew this day could come. We hoped it wouldn't, but hope doesn't keep you out of jail. It looks like the feds have finally picked up on our scent." Paris said, "Because of this stranger showing up? How can you be sure that's what it means?"
"I'm not sure. The people who wait around to be sure are the people who get locked up, but look at the facts. The stranger targeted Gibson. To do that, he must have known Gibson's routine, which involves surveillance, manpower, resources. Then he set up an incident, the failed carjacking, so that he could gain Gibson's trust. If it wasn't for the accident, which Ivan witnessed, he could be sitting here with us now. You can't know that the stranger set the carjacking thing up. Sometimes a crime is just a crime. He was making himself out to be a bum, a drifter, who just happened to be carrying a Glock. That's an expensive weapon. Where would he get the money for one? And look at how he escaped. He was cuffed to a table, then gone, disappeared, not a trace. Does that sound like the skill set of a random hobo? Paris shrugged. I guess not. But the setup thing, the carjacking, I still don't buy it. The simple explanation is usually the accurate explanation. Like with the bruises on Fletcher's head and throat, Paris thought. It was more likely the stranger kicked his ass than pulled off some magical escape. Fletcher said, "What are you driving at?" Paris said, "Maybe the stranger didn't need to gain Gibson's trust. Maybe he already had it. Maybe they didn't run into each other at the motel by chance. Maybe Gibson went there to collect him. Maybe the car bozos were just in the wrong place at the wrong time." Fletcher took a step closer to her. That would mean that Gibson was a Fed, yes. Kane crushed his can and tossed it aside. He sat up straighter in his seat.